high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's 25 time zones, every single one of them covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. And this is going to be a fascinating night all the way around. In the next hour, Dr. Klatz, who may tell you how to live forever. That's a real deal, folks, not some hokey-pokey something. He's a head of the main effort to make human lives longer in America, Dr. Klatz. Now, I'm going to give you all kinds of reasons right here at the beginning of the program to go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. And the first reason would be my webcam shot, taken just a few hours ago as the moisture moves up from Mexico. The desert becomes invaded with thunderstorms and all kinds of strange things. And I took this picture, I don't know, a few hours ago. And so there it is, taken in my backyard. That's what I lovingly call my backyard. It's on the Art Bell webcam up there. That's but one reason. Another reason is I want you to see the Art Bell Burn in Hell video. This is produced by some people. As you know, there's a group of people out there who think that President Bush and his administration are the ones who killed the Americans in New York and plowed the airplanes into the building through some giant conspiracy. They think President Bush and company did that to America. And they just cannot believe that I don't go along with them. So this group of what I call wingnuts has produced the Art Bell Burn in Hell video. And I hope you get to see it before their website collapses and itself goes down to meet the Horned One. Now, in a moment, what a treat I've got for you. Bonnie Crystal, friend of mine, fellow ham operator. Bonnie Crystal is a cave explorer and technologist. She travels to remote areas of the globe in search of unknown portals into the underground world. Bonnie is in the forefront of a new generation of wilderness explorers, as comfortable with satellite communications as she is with trekking through dense jungle, climbing the sheer face of a cliff, or descending down a 1,000-foot rope into the darkness of some sort of unknown abyss. On a 2-month-long expedition in the land of the ancient cloud people of Peru in a distant mountain range near the Amazon jungle, Bonnie has just discovered an area filled with thousands of caves, very, very deep caves, very deep. Bonnie is on a quest to explore these vast undiscovered chasms inside the earth, to seek out a strange world of mysterious life, to go boldly where no human has gone before, and come back alive. When she's not underground, Ms. Crystal is also a best-selling author, a successful electronic inventor, and a businesswoman at home in Silicon Valley, California. A friend of mine, in a moment, from Lima, Peru, she's on a break, then she goes back out into the bush for another month. In a moment, Bonnie Crystal. Bonnie Crystal has been a friend of mine now for years, and you know, she's much like me in a lot of ways. I mean, we both love electronics and antennas, and she's designed a lot of antennas, and she's just knows a whole lot about electronics. However, she has this other thing she does every now and then, and I think she's out of her mind, but she does it anyway. She goes way deep into the earth. Here from Lima, Peru, I hope, is Bonnie. Bonnie?
Hi, Art.
Ha ha, you are there. Okay, wonderful. It's great to have you, Bonnie, and you have been in Peru now for how long?
Well, I've been here for about 6 weeks now on an expedition to explore the caves of Peru.
Okay, back off a little bit from your telephone. You're popping the peas, so
okay.
You can back off a little bit.
There you go.
That's good. All right, so actually at the moment you're in Peru on a break at what, a hotel?
Yeah, I'm sitting in a little hotel. It's like something out of a Humphrey Bogart movie.
And it's
called Pension Yolanda, and it's a little place on the Pacific coast of Peru here in Lima. Huh. We just got back from the jungle and from the high Andes, way up there in northern Peru. We're loading up with supplies and a fresh crew of more cave explorers here to go out for the second phase of the expedition into the Cloud People.
Okay, we should tell the audience at this point that here's another reason to go to the website. We have tons of photographs that Bonnie sent up just before this interview, and we have them on the website. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for taking the time and trouble at the hotel in Peru on break to send the photographs up. Thank you.
Sure. Well, I was glad to be able to get them up on your site. I don't think my website can handle the traffic like yours can. So.
None of them do. Anyway, listen, yeah. Bonnie, you know, I know you seek out the deepest caves in the world. Like a mountain climber has been asked so many times, why? Why do you do this? Why do you go? I'm curious. Everybody's curious about what's in our earth. But no, I'm not so curious that I would go down into a cave 5 feet, much less 1,000 or 1,500. Not a chance. Why do you do this?
Well, for me, it's one of those things that as a child, I always wanted to go out and do things that... that the mommy wouldn't let me do, you know.
Yeah.
Don't go in that cave, Bonnie, you know.
Yeah, don't
but
go in that
on
cave.
The other hand, it's more than that. It's really that I grew up with the saying, you know, you go out there and go where no one's gone before, and to make the first steps into a world where no human has seen before or at least not seen alive after they did it.
Yeah.
I think that's fascinating for me, and it makes me feel like I'm more alive to experience it.
Well, that's a good analogy. I mean, we know less about what is below our feet than we do what's in space. We really haven't explored a great deal below our Earth. Now, why Peru? How high do you go in the Andes to get to these incredible caves?
Well, our base camp for the last phase of the expedition was at 14,000 feet elevation.
Oh, my God. 14,000 feet. That's huffing and puffing country. I mean, in an aircraft above 13,000, you've got to wear, you know, something giving you oxygen.
That's right. Well, you get acclimatized after a little while. I live at sea level, so it took me about 3 or 4 days to get acclimatized. But still, working at that altitude is still difficult. And, you know, climbing up and down 1,000-foot ropes is even more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have to stay in shape to do this kind of thing. And it's one of those things that not a whole lot of people do in the world. And I think that's part of the intrigue of it is to get out there. And that's one of the reasons why these caves have not been previously explored is because it's just so difficult to get to them.
How about the fear? How about the fear of death, Bonnie? The fear of death. That would enter into it for me. I mean, when you're crawling through something horizontally that's 1,000 feet below the ground and it's like something you can barely get through, don't you ever worry about the ground shifting way down there? And you know, I think that it's prone to earthquakes, isn't it?
Well, a lot of the earthquakes that have happened in the geologic past over the millions of years that these caves have been there have made the caves, whatever was going to happen to the cave has already happened to them by earthquakes that are much larger probably than what we'll experience here.
Uh-huh.
Geologic movement of the earth and that sort of thing. So they actually tend to be fairly stable at this point in geologic time.
Okay.
And one of the things that we watch out for is movement of rock adjacent to where we're walking through the passage, and you know, rocks anywhere
yes.
from the size of a basketball up to maybe the size of a car. I've seen move in caves, so you know, you got to watch out for that sort of thing. But otherwise, it's pretty safe once you are careful of not bumping against any rocks that will shift.
All right. You have made a potential very serious discovery already, haven't you? And I'm talking now about the writing on the cave walls that you found.
Yes, I just discovered a cave area that has a bunch of cave writing and pictographs and pictures on the cave walls, and it's not an area that was previously known to have this. Some of the writing appears to be, I grew up in Japan and know a little bit of the type of writing that is used for Chinese and Japanese, and some of this looks amazingly similar to that type of writing. So,
like kanji?
Yes, like kanji, right.
Now,
so I haven't had it deciphered yet by an archaeologist or by anyone who knows this yet, but you know, it's just a recent discovery. It just came back from the remote jungle area, and there, you know, I'm going to be showing it to an archaeologist in 3 days from now.
How far into a cave did you find this?
This was very near the entrance to the cave.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually all around the entrance. And one of the particular pictographs was as if some shepherd was counting the number of llamas that they had in their flock 1 year, and then there was another picture of the same flock with more babies in the flock.
Well, that's pretty incredible. Is there any way to estimate how old this might be, or even guess?
Yeah, so one of the ways that we do it is over a period of time, the limestone that forms the cave walls tends to dissolve somewhat by water flowing on it. And that can form a coating over the painting itself on the cave walls.
Right.
And preserve it. But you can measure the depth of the actual rock covering, the solution of rock that is formed over the painting, and somewhat get a date for this. There's carbon dating as well, and a couple of other different forms of dating.
Well, the implication then would be that long, long ago, you tell me maybe how long ago, they made it from Asia to South America. That's the implication, right?
That's one of the implications there, and there is a lot of different theories on the movement of ancient civilizations. Now, we know for sure through carbon dating that here in Peru, there is a city that was recently uncovered that is 5,000 years old, and it has pyramids. I just visited that, and it's really amazing to see that. One of the great things about it is that this particular city lived for at least 500 years, totally in peace without having armies in battles with anybody else, and you know it's really remarkable that at that point in history there was a great civilization here in Peru, contemporary with the pyramids being built over there in Egypt.
Yes, isn't that odd? Pyramids in Peru and pyramids in Egypt. And apparently appearing on the earth or constructed at about the same time. Any thoughts on how that could be?
Well, it seems like they had the same idea at the same time, and I'm not sure exactly how it was possible for them to come up with these same ideas without, other than telepathy or synchronicity or
some kind of communication of some sort. But there obviously was no radio then. There was no anything. In fact, we didn't even imagine that you could go from one of these places to another place. So what accounts for that? Telepathy?
Possibly. You know, a lot of inventions happen around the same time and through some magical means or telepathy or some, you know, the zeitgeist, some people have called it.
What about the possibility of intervention?
Certainly that's a possibility. One of the interesting things I found, I was just up at Machu Picchu ruins, the famous Machu Picchu, and I thought, well, I'll take a look under Machu Picchu, and so I started looking around the base of it, and I found a cave under Machu Picchu, and right near the entrance to the cave was a rock carving, very vivid rock carving that someone had made next to the entrance of the cave, and it looked remarkably like one of those gray alien heads. And
really?
I took a picture of it, and it'll be up on my website here probably tonight sometime.
And it looks like a gray alien.
It was amazing. You know, see for yourself if that's what.
Okay, this is in.
Now,
all right, boy, I wish I had that photograph. This is in a cave that you found under Machu Picchu. Do you think this has not been seen before?
I think it's been seen, but I don't know how much it's been studied or even photographed. So I figured, well, I'd take a picture of it and put it up on the website. And I think Jessica's trying to get it up there on my website right now at expeditioncave.com.
Say it again, please.
Expeditioncave.com.
Expeditioncave.com. All right. A lot of people are going to be up there looking for that. That's incredible. And, you know, that's at least as viable an explanation, intervention is what I'm talking about, as is... some sort of telepathy. I'm willing to bite on one as easily as the other. How about you?
Yeah, it's a total mystery for me. I don't particularly have any evidence either way on this. So, you know, and neither does anyone else as far as I can tell. There's with 5,000 years of history of here in Peru of people living around the caves and performing ceremonies in the caves,
mm-hmm.
and having cave writing and art, and as well as a lot of tombs in some of the caves here. They're finding artifacts and that sort of thing from back then. I think there was quite a bit of civilization happening at that point, and maybe there is some link between the old world and the new world. Here, maybe the new world is not so new as they once thought it was, you know.
You told me you found a cavern so deep that the only thing at the bottom of it were bones, human and animal. Is that true?
Yes, that's right. In fact, not just one, but many of these caverns. One of the things that in the particular area where I just was up in the Andes, you get these very deep canyons and high mountains with sharp cliffs and that sort of thing. And on one of the slopes of one of these cliffs, right at the bottom of the slope, was a very deep pit that went straight down.
Uh-huh.
And so we went down that with a rope. And down at the bottom, we found this big mound of bones and prehistoric animals and extinct animal bones, as well as there's human bones and that sort of thing. There.
Human bones. I'm happy to hear you didn't add yours to the pile. These are obviously...
No, I came back out alive.
Yeah. These are obviously people who... people and animals who just were unaware and stepped into the pit. That was the final step of their lives?
That's right, and it was a long step for them because it would take them about 10 seconds to reach the bottom. They'd have a little while to think about it, the last unfortunate step that they made, I guess.
Yeah, well, as you're hanging on a rope that's going down vertically into the unknown, what are you thinking about?
Well, I'm hoping that the rope doesn't braid against the rock up there near the top and break.
That would be that'd be on my mind.
but other than that, I'm thinking, well, what is this like down there in the bottom of, when I reach the bottom, what am I going to find? Is it,
yes.
I'm looking into the dark and my headlamp can only go so far, and I'm sliding down this rope and it may take me 15 or 20 minutes to get to the bottom of the rope going pretty fast.
And you mean no matter how you shine your light in the down direction, you don't see it hitting anything at all?
That's right. Yeah, even though I've got a powerful headlamp, a couple of headlamps on it, you know.
All right, listen, we're here at the bottom of the hour, so hold on, Bonnie. She's at a Humphrey Bogart kind of atmospheric hotel there in Lima, Peru. And she's about to head back out toward the cloud people and the deepest caverns in the entire hemisphere, going down into holes that just keep going and keep going and keep going, and your light can't see the bottom. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed so. My guest is a good friend of mine, Bonnie Crystal. She's a spelunker presently in Peru, in Lima, Peru. She goes down into the earth, really far down into the earth, as far perhaps as a human can go in discovered caves. That's what she does. I don't know why. Well, I guess she just sort of told me. It's not something I would do, but it sure is something I love hearing about. Well, as I mentioned, Bonnie's also a ham operator, a very devoted one, and she's a backpacker. Figures, right? That is someone who carries a radio on their back in a backpack and communicates on shortwave. And that's what she's taken down there with her. And believe it or not, she apparently heard me on the 75-meter band from way out in the middle of nowhere in Peru, and then on 18 meters, I guess. Is that right, Bonnie?
Yeah, I heard your signal loud and clear from our base camp there and up in the highlands. It was coming through great.
Yeah, it's great to hear. Music to my ears. And we're going to try and communicate as you go back out. Now, you're headed back out to go where? Another month out there, where?
Well, we're headed a little further north than we were before. We're going to be up in the Chachapoyan area. The Chachapoyans were pre-Inca civilization, and they still exist as a people, as a culture. And not a whole lot was known about them until recently, but they lived in this area of where I found thousands of caves. And we're going to be up around 9,000 to 13,000 feet for our next camp, and possibly as high as 14,000 feet.
Yikes.
Looking at the caves up there.
All right. You know, the first picture that everybody's going to be greeted by on the website shows recently Discovery, high-definition Discovery that I'm blessed to have, has been showing a series, Bonnie, on some what are called sinkholes in, I think, Brazil, actually, but in South America. These things are monstrous, and they look kind of like what you're standing in front of right here on this first photograph that everybody's going to see. It says Bonnie Crystal discovering a deep cave entrance in Peru. But it almost looks like, this part of it almost looks like the sinkholes that they've been talking about on Discovery, and they were inevitably, as I suppose perhaps were caves, were formed by water, some sort of subterranean water that caused these incredible sinkholes. And on Discovery, they're finding that at the bottom of these sinkholes, there's an entirely different biology. I mean, there's different plants, there's different, because they're so far down. So I'm sure in caves, you run into the same thing, don't you? Plants that don't exist above the surface, not to mention the possibility of life.
Yeah, that's right. You get down in these caves and it's like a time machine. It's like walking into the past.
Yeah.
They seem to preserve anything that is in them that gets preserved differently from what's on the surface, because especially if you have these very large cave entrances that go down very deep, you can have plants, animals living down in there.
Well, Bonnie, how do plants or animals? No, plants especially. We're talking about a place where there is never, ever any light. How does that work?
Well, in the actual areas where there's never, where there's zero light, there's very little bit of plant activity. Although we do find some bacteria that is unique, and we find some other types of kinds of plants that don't require sunlight. But in some of these big pits, the entrances of them are so huge, you know, we're talking hundreds of feet across.
Yes.
Like the sinkholes in Brazil. And there's enough light that reaches down into the bottom of these things hundreds of feet down that some plants can grow. And in fact, it's almost like a sampling of the plants that used to grow on the surface thousands of years ago.
Have you ever wondered, Bonnie, whether you're going to like wander into a lost world? I mean, really a lost world where everything is so far down and deep and different that you're dealing with, you know, the land time forgot. I don't know how to put it, but something very different.
Yeah, and in fact, some of the experiences that I've had have been parallel to, like, the land that time forgot, running into different species that have been thought to be non-existent at this point, or new kinds of species of plants and animals that we haven't seen before, and have discovered several different types of them. And one of the great things about it is that you never know what you're going to find down there. And that's one of the things that keeps me going. It keeps me wanting to go out in the wilderness and find these kind of caves. Is you just don't know what's going to be down there.
Yeah, I guess not. And in terms of life, are you at all surprised by what you find or don't find in caves? What kind of life lives there, if any?
Well, I've found everything from snakes and fish and frogs and birds and bats to microbes and strange-looking orange plants, and as well as all the different kinds of minerals that form and look like plants or animals in some sort of strange way. A lot of people see different figurines and stuff in the various mineralization formations. I've walked into passages where it is like being inside a geode or a vast room full of diamonds. You know, the way the crystalline features are on the walls, and it's like being inside a fabulous array of jewels or something.
Yeah, one of your photographs shows something like that, all white. What is that white stuff?
Yeah, that white stuff is gypsum crystals, and they're perfectly clear, although they show up white in the photographs. When you walk in, it's like being in a chandelier
really
shop or something.
So in other words, the only reason they look white is because of the flash of the camera.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I turned them
They're
off.
Clear. Wow, that's really trippy. That's really trippy.
It is, and it's like, you know, when the water comes through some of these passages and just makes everything glisten, it's really fantastic. It's like it is another world.
Is that
like it on the surface?
Bonnie, is that what formed those caves? Is it water?
Yes. Eons ago, the cracks in the limestone on the Earth's upper crust and that sort of thing got entered by water, and the water continued to widen the cracks in the Earth by erosion, and then the ground was uplifted from geologic forces and tectonic movement and earthquakes and upward thrusts of earth movement. And this caused the caves to get higher up into the Andes here.
Huh.
So now you have these caves that used to be, the limestone itself used to be on the seafloor. And then it got uplifted to 14,000 feet. So you can imagine the kind of tectonic and geologic forces that must have been at play.
I can imagine. I also know that you're in the rainforest area. So here's something I wonder about, and I wonder if you guys in caves wonder about it. But, I mean, if you were to hear a sudden rushing sound as lots of water coming your way when you're down in a cave crawling horizontally somewhere, you know, in the back of your mind, you've got to think, oh, my God, did something let go somewhere? I mean, is there that danger of something letting go somewhere or a giant storm happening and water finding it's filling the cave that you're in?
Yes, that is a big risk when exploring caves. If you have a flash flood into the cave from water coming in through the various pathways, that it can fill up the cave and cause you to be trapped. And just recently there was a group of British cavers who were trapped in a Mexican cave by rising water. And one of my friends had that very same thing that you just described. The sound of rushing water in the passage, it just makes us cringe, and we start heading for a high spot in the cave right away. You know, running as fast as we can.
Yeah. This is perhaps one of your longest trips, isn't it? I mean, I know you've been down there a month already, and you've got another month ahead of you. That's a long, long exploration, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It takes a long time to get to these areas. We go by mule pack and by walking and, you know, riding horses and overland and through the jungle and up into these mountains, and it's slow going. So once you get there, you know, you want to be able to spend some time. And I've got a wonderful group of explorers with me from California and Colorado and Oregon, a group that I've been caving with and exploring for a very long time here, and it's just wonderful. You know, we depend upon each other for our lives.
Yeah.
When we're down there, so you know, you get to know your friends. You know, get to know who your friends are real good when you do this.
Yes, I'm sure. We have several clips of you hanging on the end of a rope above absolutely nothing at all, and I can't even fathom that feeling. I just can't fathom it, and then not knowing what you're going to find when you, and if you do get to the bottom. Are there any so deep that you can't reach them with the equipment you brought?
Occasionally that happens. We, you know, when we got to this one cave. We anchored the rope up above and went down a 600-foot rope. And that wasn't enough. It was, you know, you're hanging free on the rope.
Yeah.
In the middle of the darkness, 600 feet down, and you still can't see the bottom. And, you know, you have to climb the rope back up 600 feet, go get another rope, and tie that on the bottom of that 600-foot rope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you keep going down the second rope, and then you look down, and you're still 20 or 30 feet off the floor of the cave.
My God.
You know, it's one of those kind of things where it's frustrating and intriguing at the same time, you know?
I would think that once you've been down and then up, 300-foot, 600-foot rope, and to get more rope, you're saying, let's pick this up tomorrow or something.
Yeah. Well, generally, 1,000-foot of rope takes me about a little over 2 hours to climb.
Wow.
So during that time, and especially at this altitude, it takes a lot of work. And I've been training for this particular expedition. I trained for 6 months solid, rock climbing and working at the gym and that sort of thing. So it's the sort of thing where speleology, which is the science of caves and knowing what is in caves, is really one of those sciences. It's considered kind of a dirty science and one that there's not a whole lot of people involved in because it just takes so much effort and you have to be in good shape in order to practice it.
I think I'm going to ask a question that I want to know, and I know a lot of people will ask too. As you go into the earth, does it get warmer or does it get cooler? A lot of action going on in the background there. Does it get warmer or cooler, Bonnie? What are the temperatures like underground?
Well, a lot of the caves seem to exchange their air with the outside once or twice a day, so there is still good air in the caves when you go down further down.
Huh.
So we don't have to worry most of the time about breathing apparatus or that sort of thing.
But is there any general rule as you descend into the earth about whether it gets warmer or cooler, or does it just depend?
Most of the caves are about the medium temperature of the night and daytime of the surface area where they are situated.
Oh, that's
so
a,
let's
that's
say you have a desert cave, it's going to be warmer in that cave. But if you get very, very deep, it starts to get a little hotter. And some of the deep mines for gold and that sort of thing in South Africa tend to get very, very hot because they're getting down there closer to the magma.
Uh-huh.
I've been in some caves. One of the caves I was in Hawaii was a steam vent cave, and it erupted sort of like Old Faithful. Every 40 minutes. So we could only go about 15 minutes into the cave.
Gotcha.
Between burps of steam in order to explore the cave. And we had to, get back out before the next burst of steam.
Isn't that like being in a car and trying to get just across the tracks before the train comes? A little? I mean, what happens to you if you don't get back out in time?
Well, you probably would die at that point
yes.
Because, you'd be asphyxiated if you didn't have breathing apparatus or something,
after all of this and hearing all of this, it really does come back to why in the world somebody would do all this. I guess you've explained it, but not in a way that would cause me to begin to lower myself on any rope into any giant hole in the ground. Do you think this might be your last great expedition, or do you think there are more ahead of you?
Well, I like to think that there's much more ahead. In fact, this recent find of thousands of caves in this particular area has sort of given me a new goal, here. We've only been able to explore about 100 of them so far. And we don't know where the other 900 of them leave,
Yes.
So, there's probably more than I could do in my lifetime here.
Do you think there's any possibility, Bonnie, that there is a cave somewhere that virtually doesn't have a bottom or an end to it? Well, a cave that literally might lead down way into the earth. Is there that possibility, Bonnie?
There certainly is, and you know, I'm out there trying to find it.
Yeah. So if you found a cave of that sort, that's like journey to the center of the earth or something. Would you just keep going, or what do you do?
Yeah, we would keep going, and we would set up and camp inside it and stay in there until we kept finding more and more passage and just continue on like that and probably get more cave explorers involved in it. There are some caves right now that we have not found the ends of. And, under the New Mexico desert, we have a cave now where we have never found the end of it. It just keeps going. So
really?
We don't really know where it will end.
I guess that's the whole reason, because we don't know where it's going to end. Well, you're a special breed. That's all I can say, a very special breed of person that would go to places where you don't know where it's going to end, and it goes down. So, again, it's been a pleasure interviewing you. I will continue to try and make some shortwave schedules with you, and I know you're going to get a pretty good setup where you're headed, right?
Yeah, from this new location on a mountaintop, I hope to be able to talk to you directly pretty good on the ham radio.
All right, well, we'll stay in touch, and all I can say is, on behalf of the audience listening and everybody out there, be safe, Bonnie.
Thanks, Art.
Good night, and take care. You're back out. You actually leave for the field again, and how long from now?
About 36 hours from now, I leave and head up into the jungle and then up into the mountains from there.
Good luck, my friend.
Thank you.
That's Bonnie Crystal, ladies and gentlemen. She does something that I surely would not in a million years, but hearing about it and then being able to see it here on the website sort of lets you be along. From Lima, Peru, that was Bonnie Crystal. I'm Art Bell.